This is a CBC podcast. With all the great programming on CBC Radio, it's hard to decide which podcasts to download. So why not subscribe to the Editor's Choice podcast? Get a carefully selected highlight every day from cbc.ca/podcasting.
Yes, quite the deal on the waterfront in St. John's these days. You know, tailors, the people who normally sell flippers from the back of their truck, well, they're selling fresh halibut these days, $4.99 a pound. And busy, that's an understatement. I dropped by to chat with Heidi Taylor and managed to squeeze a couple of minutes out of her in between her customers.
Business has been quite good. We've been extremely busy, really surprised, and really good. It's kept going. Right now we're selling halibut, and only halibut, and we're selling it in whole halibut, half, or steaks. We had a chance to buy some fresh halibut. Other years we've carried blast frozen, flash frozen, and fresh halibut is a delicacy, and most people don't get it. We had a chance to buy some at a really good price, and therefore we kept it at a good price for the public. Halibut retails in the supermarket at $12.99 a pound, $10.99 on special.
So do you sell this what's that, 20 pounds, 25 pounds, that halibut?
Yeah. 20 pounds. We have them 15 pounds. We've had them as small as 10. Halibut can be extremely huge, but we've got the average size that people are looking for.
Do people buy whole fish, or they look for steaks?
You know, majority of people buy whole or half, more so than the steaks. They don't tend to buy steaks the same because they can cut it up. It's the easiest fish to steak up. We pan-fried steaks, rolled in flour, salt and pepper, pan-fried. Actually, I've had it on the barbecue, and it is delicious. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Can I get three pieces, please?
Okay, the steaks are $6.99.
Okay. I'll give you three of those.
Three of those? We do that quite a bit. I'll show you how big they are, okay?
Okay. They're big.
Cut it in half.
Yeah, give me two of those.
Okay. I got a half of one here. Did you just want the three, or do you want two full ones?
Yeah, give me two full ones.
Perfect. $17.50.
Business is pretty brisk here.
It's been steady, one after the other. Friday we started, and we've had a couple of boats come in. It was steady. Saturday, there was lineups. Sunday's not a business day downtown. Yesterday, same thing, and today it's just consistent, and the rain is just not keeping the people away.
How long will you carry on selling here? As long as you can get fresh halibut?
As long as we can get fresh halibut, we advertise it on the radio and let people know. And we will be here again tomorrow. We're expecting a boat in. And it's going to be another week or so, hopefully. If this other boat gets any, everything's hit and miss. We don't know until they come. Right now, I know I'm good with halibut till tomorrow.
Will you sell this today, possibly?
I've been selling a gray fish tub full a day. So it's roughly 800 to 1,000 pounds a day.
Well, can you sell as much as you can get? Is there that much of a demand for fresh halibut? I guess the price is attractive too, isn't it? $4.99 a pound.
Well, we had thought we were going to bring in a load of halibut and sell it as the way it was and wholesale. The market is pretty full. The wholesale ones buying up to retail like myself are full of halibut. They can't handle it. So we said, well, let's hit the waterfront. This is our seal place when we sell flippers, and we sell whole cod. We tried it here with frozen before, done quite well. So let's try the fresh halibut, and we now know that it's good demand for it. But as the people get their halibut, and as they tell their friends, and after everybody gets their fill, it slows down again.
So the market can be saturated. You can't just sell as much halibut as you can get. There's a supply and a demand for it, and it doesn't exceed that.
That's right, and that's like anything, and except for cod. Cod tends to keep going all year long, but nope, there's a supply and demand.
What about the other possibility of a fish market for downtown, Heidi? Do you think that could work?
I do think that could work. We're into seal, we're into codfish and halibut. We don't sell lobsters down here. Seal is kind of a messy thing to be selling in a fish store. With the volumes that we sell, you go into different stores like Taylor's and Foxtrap, Big Goods, and, you know, they have their showcases and beautiful setups, and they, you know, they're selling quite a bit of flippers, but The downtown location is selling a lot of seal. And you know what? Newfoundlanders are used to coming to the back of a truck and buying their seal and buying their fish. And I know all my customers at Seal by name from coming here.
And a lot of people know you by name because Taylor is a name associated with a lot of selling out of the back of a truck. Is this a big family business?
Well, it's my dad and so many of his brothers all have different stands from in central Newfoundland to the store in Foxtrap to the location in Churchill Square and to the waterfront. Right now, the only trucks operating is the waterfront and Glovertown area. Every couple of weeks, they're in that way. But and I'm the next generation. I'm the oldest of 22 grandchildren. So we're the next one, myself and my brother, and I have cousins that are into the store, and they work with their father, and so it is a big family business.
How are you making out?
I'll take a whole one.
Whole one?
Yeah. But can you cut it in half for me? Because I'd like to. I'm working, and I'm going to have to get the lady that I'm working for laid in her fridge. I'm sure it'd be easier to get it in if it's cut in half.
It's an odd thing to ask someone. Can I put a halibut in your fridge?
Is that one there, just hold on, is that one there bigger? Are they all around the same size or what?
No, we'll check it. Just to be sure. They are, but you never know. No, he's about the same size.
That's Heidi Taylor. She sells a fresh halibut from her truck on the waterfront behind the Fortis building. So you see what happens when there are very few people between the harvester and the consumer. Halibut, $4.99 a pound. But if you want a nice display at your supermarket with heat, and employees, and bags, and packaging, and trucks to get it there, then the cost goes up. No one knows that these days more than lobster lovers in Calgary. They think they're paying too much for lobster, up to $15 a pound at a time, when harvesters are getting here $3 a pound. Lobster fishermen are not the only ones who feel like that. Crab harvesters feel the same way, and people who fish cod, and so on. So how does that work? Sylvain Charlebois is a food distribution expert at the University of Regina. Well, Sylvain, lobster buyers are complaining about the high price in restaurants. Lobster harvesters are complaining about the low prices at the wharf. Do they both have legitimate concerns?
Often consumers tend to build a strong correlation between farm gate prices of any commodities and retail prices. And often when you look at how distribution channels work, it's always difficult when you consider transactional costs, packaging, marketing, service charges, and so on and so forth. So restaurants and retail stores are dealing with extremely high overhead costs and labor costs as well. So it's always difficult to build a strong correlation between the two. Now, obviously, prices for lobsters on the dock are very low this year, which can actually provide a competitive advantage for wholesalers. But in the end, for consumers, if retailers and restaurants believe that the market can bear lobster prices as they stand right now, they'll keep on charging the same price.
So when a product like lobster or crab, which we sell a lot of in Newfoundland, I mean, every time it changes hands, there's an increase. But does it take the biggest jump at some stage, or are there equal increments every time a product does change hands?
Well, often when you look at supply chains, functions or different levels of supply chains deal with contracts and mid- to long-term contracts. So it does take time before price hikes go into effect. I'm sure some of your listeners remember last year's so-called food crisis, and we saw the prices of wheat and barley and many grains go up. So, but consumers didn't see the hikes right away, but it took about a year before hikes were felt by consumers in retail stores. So it does take time to especially when you're dealing with perishable products like a lobster. You need to eat it as soon as possible, or you have to have the logistical capacity to make sure that it's fresh when it reaches its destination. So there is a lot of costs involved, and so it does take time before costs take into effect or price increases go into effect in the end.
But is there one cost that adds more than another cost? Is distribution or packaging or transportation or marketing, are one of those costs higher than another?
Energy is certainly one variable that really drives prices higher usually. Transportation, when you think about lobsters, you need refrigeration. So that's, of course, it requires energy. So that would certainly be one that could drive prices higher. Now, prices of energy this year hasn't been much of a concern, but it could be over the long term.
Now, would supply and demand still be the rule of thumb then, regardless of where a product is in the chain?
When you look at regional demand, of course, that can be a driver. If there's a balance between supply and demand, usually prices don't fluctuate as much. The Canadian economy is doing fairly well compared to the American economy, for example, and that's probably why we see prices of lobsters way down, because lobster is considered as a luxurious food item, I guess. But when you look at the prairies, when you look at different areas in Canada, demand for products like lobster hasn't gone down. So that's why retailers and restaurants do believe that the market can bear those prices.
Lobster harvesters are continually talking about trying to get more value for their lobster, the same as crab fishermen, same as any fisherman in Newfoundland and Labrador. But short of selling it from the back of the truck where there are no middlemen, is it possible to increase the value of your product somewhere along the line?
The only way to do that is vertical integration, and that is to add value to your own commodity. Lobster fishermen are not the only ones suffering or that are vulnerable to supply chain forces. You see that in cattle and hogs and in different areas where vertical integration allows producers or fishermen to gain more control and get higher margins for their product. So you're looking at processing, you're looking at just providing a different product to the market and dealing with different customers as a whole. So that would probably be the only way at this point to do that.
How would vertical integration work in that respect, though? Would it allow processors to also harvest and harvesters to also process?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If you actually are able to control your supply chain, the better you're off and the more you will increase your margins in the end. Fishermen, oddly enough, lobster fishermen should be happy that retail prices hasn't gone down, because if you do that, then you actually decrease the perceptual value of a specific commodity. Say, for example, price of lobster at retail have gone down, say, 50%. So in the eye of the consumers, they're likely going to look at lobster as being a cheaper commodity. In food distribution, it is very important to remember that it's a lot easier to bring prices down than to bring them back up again. So actually, lobster fishermen should be thankful to see prices not go down at this point.
Because a lower price in the restaurant at the end of the chain would drive prices even lower on the wharf.
Absolutely, over the long term.
Wow.
So you're basically decreasing the level of wealth of a specific industry in the end, and that's an undesirable outcome.
That's Sylvain Charlebois. He is a food distribution expert at the University of Regina. Not sure if you have any opinions on that or on my chat with Heidi Taylor about halibut. In the meantime, 576-5287, 1-800-561-3474. The email address is fish@stjohns.cbc.ca. Music now from the CD Cannon Voices, Artists from Bay Bulls. This was a little fundraising project for the church in Bay Bulls a couple of years ago. Here's young Sarah Power. That's sweet. That's Sarah Power, young artist from Bay Bulls. She's part of a fundraising effort. It's called Cannon Voices, a CD Artists from Bay Bulls. Now, let's take a look at the marine forecast. If I can find it here. Here it is. Now, technical marine for Newfoundland systems position at 3:30 today. There's a quasi-stationary low located east of Cape Cod at 3:30 today. There's also a quasi-stationary trough located on a line northeast-southwest over eastern Newfoundland. For Labrador, at 4 o'clock today, there's a trough located on a line northwest-southeast over eastern Labrador Sea. By 9:30 this evening, that trough will be located east of the Labrador Sea. And for the Maritimes, at 3:30 today, there's a quasi-stationary low located southwest of the Marine District. That is your marine synopsis. Interesting lecture on Fogo Island this evening. Marine biologist Dr. Bill Montevecchi will take a look back and a look ahead at the changes in the lives and the habitats of seabirds of Fogo Island. Seabirds, fish stocks, human beings, and a changing planet, all still trying to forge out an existence that works for everyone, really. And there are huge lessons from the past to be learned about what happens when some things get out of whack. The lecture is free. It's at 7:30 this evening in the Fogo Island Academy. It's called The Funks, Bones, Seabirds, and Ocean Conservation. The lecture will be delivered by Dr. Bill Montevecchi. Well, Dr. Montevecchi, has there been much change in life on the Funks over the years?
Oh, yeah, John, there certainly has. We, you know, we study seabirds to study seabirds. We also study seabirds as messengers about ocean conditions, fish conditions, and, yeah, tremendous change. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's always changing. We just try and get some pattern on that change and focus on what we see as really big changes, and we've seen those, and certainly a lot of people at tune into fisheries broadcast are well aware of those. You know, some of the major changes in oceanography that happened around 1991 with the cold water and how that affected things. And, just so much change all the time. Absolutely. There's been lots of changes, and we can talk about specifics if you wish.
Now, one of the things that we all know about the Funks is one of the things we know is the disappearance of the great auk. Is that a lesson that we're still learning from in terms of how human beings and fish stocks and seabirds and the planet all try to live together?
It's absolutely one that we're still, you know, and it would be great to say that we're learning. You know, it would be great to say that. It almost, you know, we almost get to the point, can we ever learn that? I think actually we know it. It's a question of whether or not we can act on the knowledge that we have. You know, we're aware when we overexploit. Sometimes we might not be aware of our effects if we, you know, don't think we're overexploiting. But yeah, I think we've learned, John. I'm just not sure that we've taken it seriously. I mean, what happened with great auks was an overexploitation. I'm sure we didn't have the capability to kill every one of those animals, but it wasn't necessary to kill every one of those animals for that species to go extinct.
The changes that are taking place now are as a result of just the changes on the planet, or are they the result of human beings?
Well, I think it's interactive, and that's really what we see. And you know, the only thing we have, it seems, some hope of trying to control or at least modify is our own behavior. So sometimes it's quite easy to throw up our hands and say it's climate change. But certainly, we have to adapt and we have to adjust our behavior. And boy, when we watch these wild animals, we see them doing that all the time. But we have to do that because clearly what we do, you know, as we move, you know, bird populations or fish populations, as we would impact them, any changes in ocean climate, water temperatures, can just have, you know, much more different or more profound effects. So it's interactive. What we do and the environmental things that we have no control over whatsoever, those things are interactive, and we really just really have to focus on what we do, I think.
But, you know, when we talk about ocean conservation, does it seem, I wonder, it's, you know, it seems to me anyway as an individual that that's a relatively powerful subject for me personally to be involved in. Yet I know that we are all collectively responsible, but how are we as individuals in on the issue of ocean conservation?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. You know, how you as an individual, what you can do. I'm not sure how to answer that. I think
Being aware of it, I suppose, is the first step,
well,
isn't it?
Yeah, well, but I think, just to answer the question for you, I think, John, you're doing it as anyone who's a fisher to the best of your ability. I mean, you're doing it on the fisheries broadcast. I mean, if people make their living from the sea or try to make their living from the sea, I mean, they really are expert. They really do understand it. They really do know better than, you know, probably most biologists and how it works. But the fact of the matter is, and, you know, so me as somebody who studies birds, I just try and do, you know, the little bit that I can learn, and then what I have to do is I just have to think back and assess, well, what do I get, you know, what can I understand any better, and how can I help with the process? But sometimes it does come down to really simple things, and those simple things aren't always easy. They're often difficult because they would involve, you know, self-sacrifice or sacrifice, you know, on a social level, certain things we would want to do, think we can do, but we might have to hold back on.
Well, Dr. Montevecchi, what's your central message tonight now in your lecture? What do you like to leave people with?
Well, you know, I want to talk to people, but I think at the end of the day, it's really some sense of, I think you just said it a minute ago, you know, this really is our ocean. This really is our, you know, our planet. And it really is ours to be responsible for. You know, I mean, we make a living from it, whether it be from fish, from birds, from the oil that we can extract off the Grand Banks. And that, in some sense, we really do have to treat it with some kind of payback, that it's just not all a one-way, you know, just not all a one-way ticket to our advantage. It certainly does do that, but we need it. And because we need it, you know, we really have to, I think we just have to concentrate more on treating it as best we can and living our lives as best we can and using it, you know, and capturing. I just want to say one other thing that I think is so important. When I watch everything and listen to everything, you know, I hear on the fisheries broadcast, to me, the most important thing I think that's happening in Newfoundland is the capture fishery. You know, it really is the last wildlife harvest on the planet. And to me, that should be the most valuable resource that we have. And for some reason, we don't really capture that. You know, we're too ready to invest in other things and other things that, you know, lots of other people can do. But, I mean, this capture fishery of wild fish from a clean ocean, you know, wild seabirds in a clean environment and a vibrant environment, that's the greatest wealth, you know, any province could have or any society. And we have that. So I think we just have to pay attention to that.
Great message from Dr. Bill Montevecchi. He's a wildlife biologist. He's delivering a free lecture tonight, Fogo Island, Fogo Island Academy. It's at 7:30. It's called The Funks, Bones, Seabirds, and Ocean Conservation. It's Paul Simon on the guitar and a song called Angie.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.